all across America and around the world. Welcome to America's number one veterans program, the voice of America's veterans, Veterans Radio. And now here's your host for today's program, former Chief Warrant Officer, 195th Assault Helicopter Company, Republic of Vietnam, 1969, Dale Throneberry.
And good morning, everyone. 1969. Holy mackerel, that's 40 years ago. I was talking to somebody earlier this week, and Woodstock's 40th anniversary is this week also, for those of you that can remember Woodstock in upstate New York. And somebody asked if I had been there, and I said, no, I'm sorry, I was out of town that week. Wasn't able to make it. But you are listening to Veterans Radio, and we are coming to you from the studios of WDEO 990 AM in Ann Arbor, Michigan. And we want to thank the management of WDEO for offering us the opportunity of using their studios. It's been a great ride for us, and we're very excited to be on their station.
Over 300 programs.
Oh, my gosh.
Isn't that something? You know, there's a lot of television programs and shows that make it for 1 year, and we've almost six.
I know. It is kind of amazing, years. And we never run out of topics, which is always, you know, my little segue today.
Segue.
Today we're going to be talking about the GI Bill. The big GI Bill, the New Deal for Veterans, and the original GI Bill from 1944 is when it was signed by President Franklin Roosevelt. And I think you're going to be interested today. We've got the author of the book, The GI Bill, A New Deal for Veterans, Glenn Altshuler from Cornell University. And he's going to be talking to us about the history of veterans benefits. And I think you're going to find it fascinating, because when I was reading through it, I found it fascinating.
Did you have the GI Bill?
Oh, yeah.
I did, too.
And, I think they had to get us a new edition of whatever
it
was, and then they would give us...
It was retro.
They gave us, well, we'll get into this later, but they gave us X amount of cash, and we could choose whatever college we wanted to go to every month, and we had to pay our own bills.
I was driving a truck, married, two children, driving a truck, and I heard it on the radio. I called the school, called the college, enrolled, quit my job the next day. That's a true story. And went to school full time when I heard the GI Bill was coming. That's a true story.
There's a lot of stories like that out
there. Absolutely.
And I'm hoping that people out there that are listening to our program today possibly can give us a call here at Veterans Radio. And our number in the studio is 877-573-7825. That's 877-573-7825. We're going to be talking with Glenn after the welcome home break. But first, I understand that the Air Force wants to talk to us. They always have to make a big entrance. The reason we're doing this is that up at Selfridge Air Force Base, this is locally in Michigan, up in Mount Clemens, the Selfridge Air Show is going on starting this morning, and you can go out there and see the Thunderbirds, the U.S. Air Force's crack Air Force team, and you're going to be able to see them fly and give their demonstrations. There are static displays of different types of aircraft. There's going to be remote control aircraft, and we talked about this with the Navy flyers, the Blue Angels, a couple of weeks ago that were here locally, but now you have the opportunity to go up and see the Thunderbirds. It is a free show, folks. Free admission, free parking, and I'll get into the rules of what you have to do and bring up there in just a second, but Bob, I know you had a story you wanted to tell.
Absolutely.
About the last time you saw the Blue Angels down in Dayton.
When I was down in Dayton covering the Dayton Air program, Dayton Air Show, I was covering the Thunderbirds when they arrived the day before the air show. And I was given Thunderbird number one. Well, you know, they pull in formation, and the mechanics come out, and they put the ladder, and they open the canopy and unbuckle the pilot. And my pilot climbed down out of the aircraft, and my pilot walked over. And it was just me and another guy. There were five of them, I believe, that day. And pilot took off the helmet and shook her hair. I was, well, you know, you don't expect that. Right? I'm from the other military. Come on, all the guys out there. Woman just flew 800 miles an hour. They did a little air show, too, before they landed. I don't know. They must, you know, kind of get the kinks out, right?
Yeah, it's like they kind of practice. They do this really precision formation landing of four or five jets, and they come in low over the field, usually, and they peel off, and it's just exciting. So if anybody's got the opportunity today to get up to Selfridge Air Force Base, Air National Guard Base,
and by the way, I was just so taken back by the fact that we now have female fighter pilots.
We've got female fighter pilots. We have female helicopter pilots. In fact, even in the New York Times last Sunday, I believe it was a front page story about women in Afghanistan and Iraq and the jobs that they're doing over there now. So it's pretty exciting. We're going to be doing another show on women in the military coming up in a couple of months. But I just wanted to make sure that those of you out there that have the opportunity, get up to Selfridge and take in this air show. Remember, you're going to be going on to a military base, so you will not be able to bring on coolers. And all types of things
backpacks.
Like that. If you drive your car onto the base, they're going to search it. Motorcyclists, don't be wearing all your leathers necessarily, because they're going to be looking at appropriate attire.
Yes, that's right.
It's the military, and they do these things.
So I believe no backpacks.
No backpacks, no food. You can bring in a folding chair, but you can't bring in the little bag that you carry the chair in. There's all types of things. So you want to check on that, and you may have to do some walking because it's...
Now, there is one thing. Water will be provided.
Right.
That's right.
Yeah, hold on. I'm just
not sodas, but water.
Yeah. Anything that you bring in, you have to carry in your hands. Remember, no glass or can containers. Just be forewarned. Anyway, should be a great time. It's right off of M59. You're going to be able to see it 2 days, two shows. And for those of you that love this type of stuff, I wanted to remind our audience out west that they're going to be out in Hillsboro, Oregon next weekend over Labor Day. They're going to be in Cleveland, Ohio. On September 12th, they're going to be out in Sacramento, California. Then they go overseas to Hawaii and Seoul, Korea, and an unknown location, it said. And they'll be back at Homestead Air Force Base, which I believe is their home base, in November in Homestead, Florida. For more information on the Thunderbirds, go to thunderbirds.airforce.com. It's a great show for you. Hopefully you'll get out to see that. Coming up also here on Veterans Radio, we've got a big show coming up of our own. Over Labor Day weekend, we're going to be out at the Eastern Michigan Army football game. And we've got a tailgate. We're going to be recording a program out there on the 5th. And we invite all of you to come out there to see us and to meet up with your veterans. It's a special program honoring veterans at Eastern Michigan. They're going to be playing West Point, the Michigan chapter of the West Point Graduates Association. I know that's wrong. But they're going to be there, and we're going to be there, and we invite all of you. You can get inexpensive tickets, $3, if you go on to the Eastern Michigan website.
I think that's important, though, that they have to go to the website to get the $3 tickets.
Right.
Don't come to the game and get the $3 ticket.
Right. They won't have any available there for you. But you can call the ticket office, or you can go on to the Eastern Michigan University website and go to their ticket office. Their promotional code to use is VETERAN. Veteran, and you can get game tickets for $3.
Or you can be one of the first 100 that come to our site right there outside of Reinerson Stadium, beginning at 4:00 on the 5th, and the tickets will be complimentary. We have 100 complimentary tickets right now.
Oh, they're probably a little bit less than that
right now. Yes.
but show up at our tent.
89.
We're going to have a huge tent.
Let me tell you what's going on here.
We're going to have a huge tent set up there. There's going to be food for 150 people.
Hot dogs,
hamburgers, all types of things, beverages. There's going to be live music for you that we're going to be providing. We're also going to be playing a little bit of, let's say, World War II, Vietnam era current things. We invite all current Iraq, Afghanistan veterans to please come out. The American Legion, the VFW, the VVA is going to be there. The Traumatic Brain Injury Association is going to be there with materials to hand out. So this is a great opportunity between 4 and 7 on September 5th. And then we're all going to the game. They're going to honor veterans at halftime. The band's doing a great show. And then they're going to have fireworks at the end of the football game. So this is a big
great
deal,
day.
Folks.
And what time is that game again? 7
the
o'clock?
Game is at 7 o'clock, Reinerson Stadium in Ypsilanti, Michigan. And we're going to be right outside the stadium. And it's going to be a great opportunity for you to come and actually see how old we are. And to talk with us and to answer questions, because we are going to be recording a show during that time period.
Bring your cameras.
So bring your cameras.
You might want to take a shot.
That's
they don't know. We are just a voice.
That's
we are
right.
just a
That's
voice.
That's right. But it's a great opportunity, and I'm very excited. And Eastern Michigan has gone out of its way to honor all veterans in the area. So we want you to make sure that you get out there and get your opportunity to be acknowledged. You men and women who have served in the military, you did a great thing. And we want to make sure that you are aware of what you did for them. The other thing that I thought was coming up, and I'll talk about this at the end of the show, the USO, the Bob Hope Golf Outing is coming up, and I'll talk about that at the end of the program. But right now, Veterans Radio has a tradition. Every show we have done for almost 6 years now, we have been welcoming home troops from around the world. And Bob, you're on.
Thank you, Dale. Welcome home. Each week on Veterans Radio, we welcome home servicemen and women who have been stationed around the world in the service of their country and are returning home. This is Bob Gould. Dateline, Fort Hood, Texas. About 300 soldiers from the Special Troops Battalion, 2nd Infantry Division, are returning from a 12-month deployment to Afghanistan. Dateline, Cape May, New Jersey. Some 650 soldiers touched down in Fort Dix this morning after their recent one-year tour in Iraq. They are part of a group of more than 2,800 soldiers with the Army National Guard's 50th Infantry Brigade Combat Team. They were sent to Iraq in the largest overseas deployment of the New Jersey National Guard since World War II. A parade ceremony and festive picnic will honor the 79-member Alpha Troop 2-101 Cavalry of the New York National Guard. They returned after nearly a year in Afghanistan. This followed the unit's 18-month tour that was in 2005 and 2007. Dateline, Humboldt, Wisconsin. It was a welcome home celebration for more than two dozen soldiers from the 353rd Transportation Company. One soldier was heard to say, quote, "There's no place like home. I can tell you that. It's just good to be home. Good to see the kids." This is Bob Gould, and welcome home. Each week on Veterans Radio, we do welcome home veterans that are returning and sponsored by the Marine Scholars Program of Ave Maria University.
You have honorably served the United States and the Marine Corps in times of peace and war. Now we would like to serve you. The Marine Scholars Program covers the total cost of attending Ave Maria University. By combining resources from the Ave Maria University Marine Scholars Funding, federal financial aid entitlements, and the GI Bill, the benefits are granted for the duration of the recipient's study at Ave Maria University, contingent upon good conduct and good academic standing. The Marine Scholars Program is open to all reserve and active component Marines and other combat veterans of Operation Enduring Freedom and Operation Iraqi Freedom who have honorably served our country. Please visit us online at www.avemaria.edu or call the Assistant Director of Admissions at 239-280-2552. You helped us. Now let us help you. Semper Fi.
To music, how appropriate. What we're going to be talking about today is the GI Bill, a new deal for veterans. It's a new book that's been out and is published, written by Glenn Altshuler and Stuart Blumen. And our guest on Veterans Radio is Glenn Altshuler. And let me tell you a little bit about Glenn as soon as I find my notes. Here they go. Glenn is the Thomas and Dorothy Litwin Professor of American Studies and the Dean of the School of Continuing Education and Summer Sessions at Cornell University. He's also the author, and I thought this was interesting, of All Shook Up, How Rock and Roll Changed America, among other books. And Glenn, I want to welcome you to Veterans Radio. Good morning.
Yes.
Go ahead.
Hello?
Yes, hi, you're on.
Yes, it's a pleasure to be with you.
It's a pleasure to have you on the program, and I want to, as I said to people, I want to welcome Glenn to Veterans Radio, and we're going to be talking about the GI Bill. And I was, as I was listening to the music that Bob played at the intro here, I thought maybe we should go back and play some Revolutionary War music, because that's where this whole idea of helping out veterans started, wasn't it?
Well, there in every war, there has been a discussion during and following that war about the ways to reward of veterans, and in the American Revolution, when money was scarce, one way that was used was land grants to veterans. And so Americans have appreciated the sacrifices of their soldiers in every war, but the ways in which they've rewarded those soldiers and thanked them have varied dramatically from war to war.
I think it's going to be very interesting for our audience today, Glenn, to talk about the GI Bill and kind of the history of how we have treated veterans over the time. I thought that what I found most interesting was, as you mentioned earlier, about the Revolutionary War and, you know, up through the Civil War. So I wanted to address those issues initially. During the Revolutionary War, there was no draft. This was kind of initial all-volunteer army, wasn't it?
Very much so. And as you know, there's a great tradition in America of opposition to standing armies.
Mm-hmm.
And so for much of American history, there has never been a draft, and we've relied on the voluntary contributions of American citizens.
Well, in your book, you mentioned how long it took for these Revolutionary War veterans to get a, for lack of a better word, a pension. That it took quite a while, didn't it?
It did, and you know, coming out of the Revolutionary War, it was unclear whether states should be responsible for rewarding soldiers. There was a weak national government originally. There were debates about who should do what and in what way. The economy was a little bit shaky, so indeed it did take some time.
And how did they fund this? Because you mentioned a lot of figures in the book. We're talking with Glenn Alshuler. The book is called GI Bill, A New Deal for Veterans. And we're trying to figure out how they were going to fund these benefits. And initially it was through tariffs, wasn't it?
Well, as you know, in early American history, there were no income taxes. There were no sales taxes. And tariffs were really the principal mechanism in which revenues came into government.
And so how much did these veterans receive once they started receiving some funds?
Well, it really varied quite considerably. And the as I said, the principal mechanism involved grants of land. So we can't really put a dollar figure on it.
Okay. I also noticed, again, that you mentioned in your text that they were talking about the grants of land that many of the veterans would prefer cash, so they sold them off.
That's right. That there was a fair amount of land speculation. And, you know, as you know, I live in Ithaca, New York, and upstate New York was to no small degree settled by Revolutionary War soldiers through some of those land grants. And that's one of many areas that saw a transformation in the post-Revolutionary War years.
Right. And for those of us out here in the Midwest, we know that many of them came out here and also into Ohio and that area.
That's right.
And it's pretty interesting. So let's move forward. And we've got the War of 1812. We get into the Mexican War. Were they able to provide benefits for those veterans?
No real significant benefits coming out of those wars. It's really the Civil War that is the significant change. And there, of course, that's a war of North against South. So the benefits, so to speak, were obviously only for Union soldiers, and they came in the form of pensions, initially to pensions to people who had suffered some injury or wound, but then that was defined so broadly that many Civil War veterans got pensions, and ultimately their families became beneficiaries of some of those pensions as well. In the post-Civil War period, the pensions to Civil War veterans were the biggest expenditure by the federal government.
Yeah, I was, again, reading in there, you were talking about a percentage that the government was paying out in these benefits to not only the veterans, but to their families, their widows, and their children.
That's
right. It was a large percentage of the federal budget.
Yeah, and remember, it's hard for us to remember now, in those days, the federal government's functions were pretty small. So post office, armed forces, not much more than that. So when you have a pension plan, in that context, it becomes a significant proportion of the federal budget. And it was through the rest of the 19th century when Civil War veterans and their families began to die out a bit.
It just seems like it was an awful lot of money. We're talking with Glenn Alshuler,
the
author of the GI Bill,
deal.
A New Deal for Veterans, and we encourage you to give us a call here at Veterans Radio at 877-573-7825. The Grand Army of the Republic was seemed to be the political force behind that those pension plans, wasn't it?
Yes, you know, as you know, Dale, and of course this is true today with a number of veterans organizations, the formation of veterans organizations to assist veterans is a tradition in American history, and the Grand Army of the Republic was a large and powerful organization that lobbied the federal government for the kinds of assistance that ultimately these veterans got.
I was thinking, as we were talking about these retirement plans and pensions that came up there, many civilians were not necessarily in support of providing pensions to veterans because they felt that the veterans should have just, you know, they go off and they fight, but then they go back to civilian life and, you know, just go on with their lives.
Yes, and some others, Dale, saw that there was some corruption in the system, that people were getting grants of money that perhaps who didn't deserve it. And this was particularly true when the grants were tied to injuries or wounds, and there was a thought that people were essentially faking the evidence of those wounds.
Well, I can only imagine the politics of it, because we're coming up to World War I, and this is where things really started to get interesting. Because after World War I, they still did not, they just gave them a mustering out check, didn't they, initially?
A mustering out check initially, and then a promise of a bonus, but because the American economy was soft immediately after the end of World War I, that bonus would not be paid until 1940. And so when the Depression hit, many veterans said, and you can certainly understand it, look, I can't wait till 1940 for this bonus. I need this money now. And that is the impetus for the famous bonus army that marched to Washington, D.C. in 1932 to try to pressure President Hoover to grant those bonuses immediately. President Hoover refused to meet with them. He sent a young general by the name of Douglas MacArthur to clear them out of their tents in Anacostia Flats right outside of Washington. And that certainly did not endear Herbert Hoover to members of the armed forces.
No, and it's always interesting when you find these names in history of MacArthur, and I think MacArthur's assistant, you know, was Eisenhower.
That's right.
And, you know, that they actually pushing these veterans out of there. And there was some violence. It wasn't the Army didn't get involved in this. Evidently, it was the Washington, D.C. police that got involved in that. And it's a really interesting story, though, as to how the political trail that came out of World War One, because there were so many veterans that came back, and I can't remember the exact number. It's not, I don't have it in front of me, but to an economy that, you know, again, you go from fighting to civilian life overnight, and you're trying to figure out how you're going to fit back into society from the veteran standpoint. And of course, most civilians don't have a clue as to what you've gone through, and they just think, well, you know, just come back and go back to work.
Oh, no, you're so right, Dale. And it's very important to say that the failure to address the reintegration of veterans of World War One is provides the pressure to do a much better job for veterans of World War II. You know, we all know that expression, fighting the last war. Mm-hmm. Well, the GI Bill of 1944 not only fights the last war, World War One, but fights the current war, World War II, with probably the most important piece of legislation of the 20th century.
Well, we're going to get right into that right now. We got about 5 minutes to go before we get to the bottom of the hour. We're talking with Glenn Altshuler, who is one of the authors of the GI Bill, A New Deal for Veterans. If you've got a question or a comment, give us a call here locally at Veterans Radio at 877-573-7825. All right, we've got World War One is behind us. We've got Roosevelt is now in the White House, and he is doing all sorts of things with his New Deals. And what happens? How does this GI Bill get going?
He was interested as early, really, 1942-1943 to make sure that veterans had a smooth transition to a peacetime economy. And he was motivated by several reasons. One is there was a tremendous fear that if you don't do something to assist World War II veterans, you're going to have 16 million men and women plopped down on the economy looking for jobs without adequate resources. That might plunge the United States back into a depression. So there was an economic impetus for helping GIs. And, of course, there was a moral impetus that many of these guys and women had interrupted their lives, had sacrificed for the country, and at the very least, they should be provided the opportunity that was available to those who didn't go and serve in the armed forces. Those two reasons converged, and President Roosevelt, Democrats, and Republicans came together. This is a wonderful moment, Dale, of bipartisanship. We don't hear a lot about bipartisanship in 2009, but bipartisanship is certainly in evidence in the GI Bill of 1944, which passes unanimously and whose provisions are extraordinarily generous, the most generous provisions for veterans in the history of the United States.
I think it's amazing that Roosevelt was able to maneuver this bill through the various factions that were out there. And I know that the American Legion was very instrumental in getting the GI Bill program approved. Can you talk about a little bit of their influence?
The American Legion is responsible for the shape of the bill, and the really brilliant idea of the American Legion was to put all of the provisions that were being talked about together in one piece of legislation. So this piece of legislation not only has a provision for GIs to go to college, sub-college training, unemployment, housing, the possibility of purchasing a business or farm. That's an extraordinary array of benefits. The American Legion is also responsible for calling the bill, the GI, the bill originally it was called for GI Joe and GI Jane, and for mobilizing support for that legislation. So the role of the American Legion is critical in the passage of the bill. There's no question about that.
And I'm sure that the other veteran service organizations of the time got involved with that. And I think it's just very interesting to think about. Again, I'm so amazed how he got this through with the different factions that were out there, from conservatives to liberals, and there was some restraint that they didn't want to provide a bill for a specific group of people, because they'd already had, you know, they finally got Social Security passed in, what, 1935, I think.
35, yeah.
And,
but you know, Dale, one of the ironies, I think, for the GI Bill is that the people who passed the bill and the American Legion really didn't think that the most important or most costly provision in the bill would be the higher education provision. And so since they thought that maybe not all that many GIs would go to college or university, they made the provisions a little bit more generous because they didn't think they would be budget busters.
I think this is a good place to take a break, and we're going to come back and talk about the amazing effect that the GI Bill had on our father's generation when they came home from World War II. We're talking with Glenn Altshuler, one of the authors of the GI Bill, A New Deal for Veterans, and we're going to be talking about that when we come back. Give us a call, 877-573-7825. Tell us how you used your GI Bill. We'll be right back. You're listening to Veterans Radio.
For 3,400 recipients of the nation's highest award, this is one of them.
Staff Sergeant Webster Anderson, although wounded by 3 hand grenades, refused medical treatment and continued to lead his men. Details after this.
I know what you're going through.
I've been there.
Nobody else I know has been there.
It's not easy being a veteran.
Coming back from Iraq or Afghanistan, I had been so excited to come home.
But it's harder than I thought.
Not everyone understands that.
Things at home may be as you left them.
But you don't feel the same.
Join us at communityofveterans.org.
And connect to others who are going through the same thing.
Because no one knows what it's like to come back unless they were there.
Brought to you by Iraq and Afghanistan Veterans of America and the Ad Council.
During the early morning hours, Battery A's defensive position was attacked by a determined North Vietnamese Army infantry unit. The initial enemy onslaught breached the battery defensive perimeter. Anderson mounted the exposed parapet of his howitzer position and became the mainstay of the defense of the battery position. Anderson directed devastating direct howitzer fire on the assaulting enemy while providing rifle and grenade defensive fire against enemy soldiers attempting to overrun his gun section position. While protecting his crew and directing their fire against the enemy from his exposed position, 2 enemy grenades exploded at his feet, knocking him down and severely wounding him in the legs. Despite the excruciating pain, and though not able to stand, Anderson propped himself on the parapet and continued to direct howitzer fire upon the closing enemy and to encourage his men to fight on. Seeing an enemy grenade land within the gun pit near a wounded member of his gun crew, Anderson, heedless of his own safety, seized the grenade and attempted to throw it over the parapet to save his men. As the grenade was thrown from the position, it exploded, and Anderson was again grievously wounded. Although only partially conscious and severely wounded, Anderson refused medical evacuation and continued to encourage his men in the defense of the position. Anderson, by his inspirational leadership, was able to maintain the defense of his section position and to defeat a determined attack.
The Medal of Honor series is a production of Veterans Radio.